Welcome to the Philippe Matthews Show at thepmshow.tv. Named the Oprah of the Internet by Mark Victor Hansen, Philippe Matthews doesn't ask questions that are different. He simply asks questions that make a difference. The Philippe Matthews Show features entertainers, bestsellers, authors, thought leaders, change agents, and world-class experts in the field of personal, spiritual, and professional development. An internet marketing entrepreneur, Philippe is the creator of the How Movement, dedicated to teaching people how to move from the mindset of hope to the process of how. If you are ready to take your life to the next level, move from the mindset of why to the mindset of why not. Tune in right now to this latest edition of the Philippe Matthews Show and watch your life grow.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Philippe Matthews Show. I've got a tremendous lady with me on the phone today. She is a powerhouse. She is, in my opinion, the poster child of overcoming adversity. She has a new book out, her autobiography called My Life. Her name is Tawana Lawler. How are you, my dear? Welcome.
Thank you. I'm fine. I'm feeling great right now. I'm happy.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you for being with me today and taking the time out. Your story, we talked a little bit before came on the show today. Your story is nothing less than amazing. It's also extremely tragic, but you are, by the grace of God, a walking and living testimony of what your faith can do. Walk us through, I mean, literally, it began in your childhood with your father committing, I mean, even before your father committed suicide. I think you were 12 years old at the time. Talk to me about your young life, and then we'll come forward to some of it, which is, you know, we could just do the show on that. That's enough. My God, you got so many other things here. But talk to me about that, your childhood, and where are you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And up to 12 years, in my mind, I was living a happy childhood. My mom and dad was together. It was myself and my three younger brothers, and we were okay. I know they were having issues, but I didn't think, you know, to the level it was. She left my father and took us with her, and he was depressed. He got depressed about that because she took us up.
How many brothers and sisters?
I don't have any sisters. I'm the oldest, and I have three younger brothers.
Okay.
So I was like daddy's girl.
Understood. Gotcha. So it was a very special relationship, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you find out that your father had taken his life?
We had went to see him the day before, my brothers and I. And he was on his knees, and he was crying, and he was asking us to come back. He didn't care about my mom coming back. He asked us, he said, I love y'all. I want y'all to come back. She done took y'all away from me. And she had moved this gang that we didn't even have a clue who he was. So we said we're going to go back home with our dad. And we was on our way, and our cousin the following day, pulled up and said, come on, y'all got to go with me to the hospital. And he didn't tell us until we got there, and they said he had shot himself. He was still alive then, but then they wanted to take us home. And they took us home, and then they ended up calling and telling my aunt he had passed.
Mm.
So, and that was really hurtful because we didn't have nobody. You know, we was mourning. And they looked at it like, okay, he's dead. So, but he was our father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't want that to happen to him. And it happened. And it bothered me for years. I mean.
You obviously blamed your mother for this.
I didn't in the beginning. I didn't. I was just happy to have a mom. So,
mm-hmm.
You know. But we didn't have a real good relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it had to do because of, you know, me and my dad was real close. I could go, I was able to go to him and talk to him about things.
Mm-hmm.
I was never able to go to her. She didn't know how to hug and embrace. My dad did. So
mm-hmm.
it was like night and day.
So your mom wasn't really affectionate?
Wasn't at all.
Okay.
Not at all. And, you know, we kind of looked at that as being mean because I hug my children and my grandchildren. I love them to life. And I tell them I love them. But, you know, I had to grow up. I had to grow up. And from 15, you know, I didn't like the situation. That's why I ended up getting pregnant.
Now you went to stay, you were 14 and you went to stay with you had a boyfriend at the time. So you're probably kind of mm-hmm. looking for love from, you know, somebody giving you attention, looking
right.
for kind of that fatherly love and that you weren't an affection that you weren't getting from your mom, and clearly mm-hmm. could not get from your dad. So you went into this relationship, with the mind of a child, of just wanting to be loved, walk us through that. What happened with that boyfriend?
And I'm glad you understand that because a lot of people don't understand, and I'll be telling them I was a child.
Yeah,
I wasn't
absolutely.
An adult.
Right.
I was a child. And I had no one to guide me.
Mm-hmm.
She even sent papers for me to marry this man, and I told her recently, I said, you sent me over to the devil because he used to beat me every single day. I had nobody, no family member came to me. I was by myself.
And how old was this boyfriend?
When I was 14, he was 18, so he was too old to even be looking at me.
Okay.
And then we were kind of dating, but, you know, he, like you said, he was showing me affection. He was taking me places, and we didn't do nothing. At my house,
mm-hmm,
just
mm-hmm.
sit home. We went out to the clubs and stuff, so we did nothing. Me and my brothers just sit here and have to find something to do.
Mm-hmm,
but,
ended up marrying this guy.
Yeah, because my ex mother in law talked us into it. I didn't really want to,
mm-hmm.
but she talked us into it, and I'm saying. Please don't, because I wasn't living with my mom, because I ended up moving out. I didn't like living with that guy, and I knew if I got pregnant, she was going to want me out because she was worried about how she looked to her friends and family,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because, you know, she's always
so in one sense, you kind of like ran away from home. You ran into the arms of this guy who was showing you some kind of attention and affection and love
mm-hmm.
that your
right.
mother wasn't giving you, and obviously you're still mourning from your father's death. I mean, it takes years.
Yeah.
For that to happen. And as a child, you have no frame of reference whatsoever. So, and no one to talk to, no counseling or structure. So,
right. exactly.
it's just common sense. It makes sense that you would run into this guy. And unfortunately he was not a good guy because, you know, he's 18. Most people you're still figuring it out for himself. So
mm-hmm.
it's like hurt people.
Right. Yeah, he was horrible.
So when did the abuse begin? When did you notice the change, the shift of his attitude towards you, or did it start right away, or was it something? And of course, you know, you probably became addicted to the abuse in a sense because you didn't have really anywhere else to go.
I didn't have nowhere else to go. You're right, but it didn't start right away. It didn't start until we got married. The day we got married, and he said I was looking at his brother, who was not even attractive. In my eyes, he was not attractive. So, and plus, it was his brother. So I wasn't looking at his brother, but that's how jealous he was. And he hit me in my eye and blacked my eye. And that's when it started. It started mm-hmm. after that. He apologized the same old thing. I love you. I'll never do it again. And it started
mm-hmm.
almost everything. I was terrified of him. I was, because he was like, you better not leave me. If you leave me, you better not leave. I'm going to hunt you down. I'm going to kill you and the kids. He was always threatening me. He would lock me in the house. I mean, it was crazy.
He said he hit you on your wedding night. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Wow.
He did. Man, I was like, why am I in this? And I was mad. I was mad at his mother. I was mad at him. And I was mad at my mother for signing me over to him because she could have said no. And she did it.
Wow.
And I never did understand that. But right now I'm staying with her temporarily, trying to get the money together to go to New York. And so we were sitting talking. She took me out to lunch. And I asked her, I said, why did you send me over to him? Because all these years, I mean, this happened. I was like young. I'm 54 now. So
sure.
Since I was 12, I'm telling you, it's been a life of hell. I have like good days and then the bad days outnumber the good days.
Mm-hmm.
It's always bad luck. And like you said, looking for relationships in all the wrong places. I'm was standing, like now I've been celibate for 15 years and I'm proud to be, say that I'm that. But
absolutely. But you got pregnant, you said you, I remember you said you even got pregnant on purpose, and I think the reason for that you said is because you wanted, you know, it makes so much sense, when you, especially when you're a baby, literally. You're looking for love, and so now you have an abusive relationship, and so that baby gives you love that nothing else in the world can give you.
Right.
It's like an unconditional love.
Yes.
So that's the mindset that you have, not understanding the consequences of, you know, I'm raising a human here. But, you know, your child, how can you, you know, the brain doesn't fully develop until you're 26.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you just... You know, a lot of young girls don't have a chance out the gate. A lot of young men don't have a chance out the gate almost at birth. They're kind of going through this process. So what age did you get pregnant?
With my oldest daughter, I had her at 15. So
okay.
I had to be like 14. So I had her at 15, and then I married her dad, and I end up having another baby because he wanted another baby. He wanted a son, but I had another daughter. And he treated her different, too, because he wanted a son so bad. And he kind of didn't have a relationship with the kid, but, you know, they were all I had.
And all of this is, mind you, all of this is illegal because he's grown. You're a child.
Right.
14, 15. So this is absolutely insane just in that alone.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom signing off on that is unbelievable. So he started abusing your second child, your daughter.
No, he didn't touch. As far as we know, he never touched my daughter. But what they did, I had a third daughter by somebody else. And what he did, when I had her, I asked them, could they keep the two oldest just for a couple of days while I healed? And they were like, yeah, we'll keep them. We're happy to do that. The next day, because I missed them, so I wanted them to come home. So the next day I called, and at that time, we didn't have a project. We didn't have a phone. I walked like a block to the pay phone. And it's in the snow. And the call to tell them, ask them would they bring them back, would
mm-hmm.
if their mother, ex-mother-in-law, bring them back. And the sister said, well, you ain't getting your D kids back, B. She didn't say the letters. She said the words.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before I changed my life. So I went off on her and said, yes, I am. And they wouldn't give me my kids back. And I called the police, and the police said, y'all still married. He said, so there's nothing we can do. I was devastated.
My goodness.
And I was a young mother, but I fought.
So you were still married to this guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously still looking for love in all the wrong places, right?
Well,
I'm that's the best-selling song, right?
Yeah.
So you found this other guy who was also giving you attention, that wasn't beating on you, wasn't probably calling you out of your names, and then arguing and fussing and fighting with you. You ended up having relations with him, having another child. And so the levels of betrayal of your life and of your heart was just started to have a domino effect, in a sense. I think I remember you telling me at some point you got kicked down the stairs or something like that?
Yes, that's by my ex-husband. So
at what point did you divorce? At what point did you develop the strength and temerity to divorce your the first husband? And how old were you when that happened? Was it around 17, 18 years old?
I was about 18 when I divorced him. Because at 19 we were going through that custody battle. They wouldn't give me my kids, and they had that wrong. I didn't lay them take that lightly, because my daughters were better off, although we were poor. They were better off with me because they had love. Those people, all of them now, are on crack.
So
my daughters, they used to smoke a lot of weed in the beginning anyway, and I didn't like my daughters around them. And then my daughters didn't like going around them after they got older, and I told them what happened because they were like 2 and 3 when this happened. And when they came back, they were totally different. So I don't know what happened to them, why they were gone. They had them for about 4 months. They wouldn't let me talk to them or see them, and I don't know what happened, but they said they were crying every day for me. And then one day, the ex-mother-in-law brought them home and said, they keep crying for you. We just going to bring them home. And it wasn't my weekend. Then we had joint custody. It wasn't my weekend. He brings them home. Go to the somewhere and call the police and say I kidnapped the kids.
Oh my gosh! Oh,
and the police were appalled, and they said, "Look, now you got them, keep them." And so he said, "Go and file for a divorce and divorce that man." And that's what I did. He gave me an attorney. I got it pro bono. He gave me an attorney, gave me a call with the attorney's name on it. I called the attorney. I got my, Lola is my maiden name. I got that name back and everything.
Wow, that's amazing. Were you ever in school at some point? You had to drop out?
When I was with my ex-husband, he was really jealous. He was jealous and controlling. I couldn't go to school. So he made me drop out. That's why he was locking me in the house. See, he locked me in the house. He would take the phones and everything. I had no way to communicate with people or anything. But one day he came home. You was asking me about when did I leave. What prompted me to leave was when he kicked me down the stairs. And my daughters were sitting on the couch screaming and crying. And I was like, oh, no, this is it. And I was young, but I knew, I'm not taking this anymore. Because either he's dead. Or be him dead, because then I'm getting tired of being beat. I'm getting tired of that, having black ass. And when he came home from work one day, I was gone. I was gone. He came home, but he couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand
it. At some point, because, I mean, you know, you're here again. You're still a child. You're trying to numb the pain. Did you get caught up in drugs with your third child? Or what point, or how did that happen?
I never did drugs.
Okay.
I never in my life, I never ever did that. And that's what trips my daughter out. They like, you never became a crackhead or nothing. They tell me I'm strong all the time. I never did that, but I'm going to tell you what I did do. I used to drink beer a lot. And I didn't start doing that until I was like 21. When I was like 21 or 22, and started smoking cigarettes. And I was like 22, hadn't make it, thought beer was disgusting. But I was raped. And when, you know, I was like, I needed something to take that off my mind. I didn't, you know, like alcohol, and I didn't like marijuana. I didn't like all that stuff. So the beer was my choice. And that's what I used to drink. And now I say I was a beeraholic. But I don't drink now, and I don't smoke. I don't do any of that now. And it's been like.
And you were smoking cigarettes, I guess. You started that habit as well.
Yeah. Thinking it's clearing my mind of all the hurt, because.
Sure. Absolutely.
This has been like, you know, the average person would be to commit suicide. Because
you were suicidal. So walk me through that. I mean, obviously, thank God you were not successful. But, you know, unfortunately, there are many souls that have killed themselves for less.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So what kept you alive? What made you decide to live?
I'm going to tell you what, when I became suicidal, like all the things I had been through, the rape, the abuse, because the second, my third daughter, her dad was abusing me too. So I ended up leaving him. And that's when I was raped. And I just been through a whole lot. Then I ended up getting pregnant and had a little boy, but it was stillborn. So it was just things.
So the rape was a stillborn baby?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know where that. Yeah, I don't even know if it came from that or the guy that I was dating at the time. So I'm not for sure. And I just hate even thinking about that because it's disgusting. And I don't understand why people do that to women or men, kids, children. I don't understand. But I had to raise, it's just a lot that got me to the suicidal point. I had to raise my grandchildren. I don't know if I told you this before. I raised them for 10 years. The whole 10 years, their mom was threatening me, cursing me out. I had to get a warrant taken out on, and this is my daughter now, my third daughter. Turns on me, act like I'm somebody, calling me bees, and saying that's why the doctors couldn't find out what was wrong with me that's why I'm going to die. And when I died, she gonna spit on my grave. So she was just horrible these whole 10 years. So when I found out I had HIV, because that's when I was suicidal.
Now, wait a minute. Let's go back a bit, because this is, for the people listening to this and hearing this for the first time, I don't know if there's a dry eye out there. And talk about a heavy heart. Now, how old were you when this happened? You were dating a minister or had met a minister because you had become saved. At some point you said, okay, enough is enough, and you met this minister and you gave your life over to Christ. Walk us through that point to the point where that the HIV and everything occurred and where you're at with your daughter, your third daughter.
I had met the guy before I got the children. So this is how long it was in my body. I didn't even know I had it. It was in my body for a long time. I met the guy like in 1999 is when I changed my life and I stopped everything completely and became celibate. Up until that point, I wasn't even doing anything because I had to have surgery. So I just didn't have the urge to be with no man and drink. So I didn't understand what was going on, but I think a lot of it too was God was calling me. I really do believe that, because one night I was in the bed and I was crying and I just heard a voice and saying I was going to be okay. And that's why I got up and started writing poems again. I had stopped writing the poetry. I got up and started writing the poems. And then this guy, I wrote this book. And the guy seen me on Black Planet. And he sent me a message. So we started talking. We talked to like 2002. So we talked for like a year. And then he was like, we're going to have to meet. And so I was like, okay, because he's telling me he wanted to marry me. He's a minister. So I'm like, he's okay. He's a minister. So
you got kind of like an online dating kind of thing over a couple of years. You develop obviously a friendship that turned into a relationship that became intimate.
And one time, that one time did it. When I met him,
the minister is the one who gave you HIV.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't been with nobody else.
How did you find out that you had HIV?
Because 10 years later, it was 10 years later. I started getting sick.
And this is during the time that you're kind of having the fallout and disconnection with your third daughter.
Daughter, yes. I had the grandkids then.
Okay.
They gone back now with her because it's a long story. the book is going to make people say they read his book and they done cried because when I found out I had HIV, I had been, at that point, I had been celibate for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me who was the last person. I couldn't remember because I had dementia. I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they went out. In the beginning, I told them who it was, who the last person was. But then they asked me again later on. And I was really, really sick because in the beginning, well, they didn't even ask me in the beginning. I knew who it was. Me and my daughter knew because I wasn't with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I was celibate almost 3 years, wasn't getting sick. I didn't start getting sick till after him. And I mean, like 3 days later, I started having little symptoms, but I never thought he's a minister. So I never
mm-hmm.
thought.
Mm-hmm. You never connected to
God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I never thought HIV, and I had to get tested because I wasn't having sex. After him, that was the
mm-hmm.
one time. And
mm-hmm.
I just didn't do it anymore. Me and him didn't even talk anymore. He just fell off the face of the earth. He disappeared. He moved to Atlanta. He forgot who I was and didn't talk to me anymore, which let me know he was guilty. But, you know, I was mad for a little bit, but I got over that because I almost died from being foolish.
Oh, absolutely. Now, there, as your health began to deteriorate while you were going through this, you know, horrendous disconnection with your third daughter, you found out that you had full-blown AIDS.
Yeah. And dementia.
Walk us through that, because how did you come back from that?
When I found out I had the depression got deeper, but I knew that me not taking medicine, what was going to happen, but I didn't know it was going to be slow. I wanted to die. So I was okay.
So you stopped taking the medications?
I stopped going to the doctor and everything. I stopped.
Wow.
I was in denial. I said, I don't have it. I'm not claiming it. I don't want it. I don't have it. And I just didn't go for about three years. And I wasn't getting sick or anything. It's just one day. I guess the disease said, I still having seizures. And that's when my daughter, I don't remember having the seizure, but they told me, they said they were real bad seizures too. And it caused dementia. So I don't have a memory. I lost. I didn't know who my kids were. I didn't know how to walk. I couldn't take a shower, so they had to give me a shower. They had to feed me. When I talk about what they did, I get emotional because I love my daughter so much. And see, well, I was a young mother. The only one that's different is that third one. I have four daughters. The other three, they're crazy about their mother. They'll do anything for me. And they were there with me when I was sick. And they made sure I went to the doctor. They made sure I took the medicine. They couldn't give me the medicine because I wouldn't take it. So they had to come and make sure I take it. I was all good. I just didn't want to do it. I was just, I said, life sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is this what life is? Is am I going to keep going through this? And I wanted to die. I did. And I knew it was bothering my daughters. And you know, my daughter was so devastated one day. And she came in crying. And that's what made me change. They'd have told me a lot of times, Mama, you dying. The doctors had told them that I'm dying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had full-blown AIDS. My CD4 was really, really low. So coming out of it was a miracle. They didn't think I was going to come out of it. I came out of it. I came out. One day, my daughter said, why are you up? I said, I just went to the bathroom, and they were floored. They was like, you've been going to the bathroom? I said, yes. And I told her, I said, I don't want to wear those Depends anymore because I had to wear Depends. I said, I don't
mm-hmm.
need those because I couldn't control my. It was like a baby. It was like they were
mm-hmm.
taking her care
mm-hmm.
of a 50-something-year-old baby. You know, she said to me, and She said if I died, it was going to devastate them. It was going to devastate my grandkids. And the guy that God said, I'm going to marry, I'm not going to meet him. He's going to marry somebody else. That did it. And I mean, all the times they try to talk to me, I would never listen. I'd be saying to myself, leave me alone, get out of my room, shut up, go on. But that day,
the power of love and legacy. The power of love and legacy.
Yeah. That did. And she was praying, and I knew it, yes, and it brought me back. And I tell her all the time, everything they did, I'm telling you, when I look back on it, I'm like, oh my God, because it was like I was a baby, and they was watching me die. They was watching their mother die.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
brought me back.
Emotionally devastating for everybody.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It was emotionally devastating for everybody.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, because my mom seen me on Skype, and I don't remember that either. They said I looked like a skeleton. I was like 98 pounds, and my hair was falling down. I was sick, I'm telling you. I was really sick. And now I'm not AIDS positive. I'm HIV positive.
Wow.
Because I did what I had to do. I'm undetectable. I'm okay.
My God.
I'm okay.
You're going to make it hard for me to do the next interview with somebody talking about they got a problem. You know what I'm saying? I can't even talk about my problems right now. I'm like, well, you know, I'm just going through some stuff right now. But, you know, I'm going to think about trauma and say, well, you know, if you really want to talk about going through some stuff, let me introduce you to my good friend, Twana Lola. Okay, so when did the – now you were kind of always creative. And you wrote poetry. You wrote screenplays. When did you decide to write this book about your life? And thank God that you wrote this book about your life. I want to say this publicly on the show. I'm so proud of you for writing this book and for telling this story, because it's going to be a story that is going to heal so many lives on so many levels.
Oh my God.
From mother-daughter issues, from personal love issues, from depression issues, from male-female relationship issues, for teens and preteen issues. The list goes on and on and on. For those who contract HIV, it is the book. It is the feel-good book. I want to see this. Somebody's going to be turn this into a screenplay, make this a movie about your life. You need to be on Oprah. You need to be on all the shows. You are just amazing. So I just wanted to get that out and have that recorded before we go forward. So now, let's go back to my original. I received that. I received all that.
Oprah, I'm like, there you go.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely.
Wait till I tell my daughter you said that, because my daughters tell me all the time, one day you're going to be on Oprah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, it's hard to get on Oprah.
It's hard to get on. Well, guess what? You already done the hard part. Look, you know, come on, sister. You already done it hard, so it's your time. It's your time. So you've always been creative. You're welcome. You've always been creative. You've been writing poetry and talk to me about the screenplays. And when did you decide to tell your story and write this book, My Life?
After I had always thought I want to write a book about that, because when I was younger, I was going to this community college, and I did finish that. It was after I left my ex-husband, and I got my GED, and I went to a community college, and I had an English class, and I wrote an article. I was writing for my class, and he asked me, can we put this in the school paper? I said, of course. So he pulls me to the side and he said, one day you're going to be a great writer.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, I really didn't think about it until I wrote this book. Then I thought about him, because he did say that. And I always remembered it. But, you know, life was taking me all kind of curves. up and downs, up and down. And I just wouldn't write. I
when
just
you're
didn't.
Living when you're living your life and living the life, you don't think about writing about it.
Right,
dab in the middle of it, yeah.
And then it was my daughter. They said it was prophesied that like 16 years ago, I was going to write a book that was going to heal the nation.
Mm.
So I never knew what the book was going to be. But then when I went through this sickness and almost died, and that's when both my two oldest daughters, it says, time for you to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, for real? So I was like, I got to pray on it. So I prayed on it, and it was time. It was time. And I said, well, God, if you want me to do it, give me a title. And I started hearing the song My Life by Mary J. Blige in my head. And I said, oh, my God, My Life. And then I told my daughter, said, that is a good title because it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
You know, I said, well, we got to have, you know, a subtitle. And that's when I came up from Tragedy to Destiny, because my whole life has pretty much been tragic. But coming back from death, near death, was my destiny.
Absolutely.
And then, and because of that, I've met some wonderful people. You,
mm-hmm.
I spoke at a women's conference in
mm-hmm.
Dallas on May the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Had the women stood up, gave me a standing ovation. I'm the only speaker who got a standing ovation because of my story. So what you saying is true, because of my story. They came up to me when I came off the stage. They all rushed up to me, wanted to hug, wanted to kiss, and they were telling me, thank you for being bold enough to tell your story, because
mm-hmm.
now I want to tell my story. They was like, you make a meet, then I want to be bold and share it. They was like, because I can't get up there and say, you know, I done been through all this stuff, but it's life. And a lot of people can't say they did that. They could say, I can write a book. I'm telling you, a lot of my so-called friends, they done said that after I done wrote this book. I can write a book, too.
Mm-hmm.
But then read my book and take my life, because
mm-hmm.
I don't think you better to do it. Because, like my daughter said, a lot of people be done really committed suicide. But for one, I had the love of God, and I have to give him all the honor, because he kept me going. He kept me, I'm telling you. He told
the
me.
The undercurrent of this entire story is love. Undercurrent
yes,
of this entire story,
yes.
The entire life is love. It started with you seeking and trying to find, well, the love of your father and your family.
Yes.
Then seeking love, trying to fill that void in absence of your father. Then the love of your children. And having a little baby look up at you with unconditional love and love you and follow you around all over the house everywhere you go. And then, fell out of love with yourself and stopped loving yourself in a sense and said, I'm just going to give up. I keep looking for love. I keep asking for love. I keep being honest and vulnerable to love. And I keep getting betrayed by love or by those who do not know what love is. And so you gave up on love for a moment. But then it was your daughters who looked at you and said, Mom, and communicate, you know, truth recognizes truth. Sometimes you can't put it into mm-hmm. words. But they'll look at you and say, hey, Mom, I love you. You know, this would devastate me and devastate us and devastate your grandkids mm-hmm. and the legacy that you're going to leave behind. This is not, you know, you dying is not your choice right now. And it was that love that brought you back.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole story of your life is a love story. So I totally commend you on this, on your journey. And I can't say enough how proud I am of you. What's next for you? You've got 8 grandkids. Jeff. I know you're busy.
I raised them 5 for 10 years, so I'm on a break from them. My youngest, almost every day, and she's about driving me crazy, but she's a cute little chocolate cupcake. when you said about following, she does that, and she's 6 years old. She follows me around the house and looks up to me, and, you know, she loves her. They call me Ganna, and she loves her Ganna because I was a young grandmother, so I was like, y'all not, don't call me granny.
Yeah, okay, got it. You don't feel like a grandmother yet.
I said, call me. So I made up the name, Ganna. I said, call me Ganna. And all eight of them call me Ganna. Their friends call me Ganna and everything. So that's my nickname for them, Ganna. But is that, I'm having a little hiatus from the grandkids. I need a break.
Okay.
I'm enjoying my break.
You deserve it. Yes, you've earned that. We're running out of time. What I'd love to do, how can people get in contact with you? What's your web address? And I know they can get the books on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and everywhere books are sold. What is your web address, and how can people contact you for speaking engagements and what have you?
Yes, I'm going to leave my email address, and they can email me because I'm not using that Tawana Lawler anymore.
Okay.
And they can email me. And then also, as far as the book, it's not really ready, but they have to get, if they really want it and they want the full story, the real story, it's in the second edition.
Well, the second edition is what we're talking about. And since this is pre-recorded, yeah, we will release the interview when the book is available.
Oh, okay.
So that way you don't have to worry about anything. So just, you know, speak as if the book is out and ready and available.
Okay.
So how can people get in contact with you?
Well, they can go to Barnes & Noble. It's going to be on Barnes & Noble's Amazon. It's going to be on Amazon. And they also can email me with any questions at mylife4861@aol.com.
Fantastic. Tawana, I'm going to speak it now, and you know how you speak things in power, and it comes into fruition. I want you on my live video show. I want the world to be able to see this live around the world, and I want you to be able to tell your story. We'll figure it out. We'll find out how we can make it happen, but I want you to come back on the show. I absolutely adore you. I think you are the best, and thank you for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. God bless you. We'll talk soon.
God bless you, too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.